This is a visit with Gail March in her home at 1415 West Boulevard in Rapid City, South Dakota. The date is September 12, 1986. The interviewer is Dana C. Jennings. Now, if you will speak right up, just sit back and relax. I think we can catch you here. Let's start at the beginning. Where were you born?
I was born in Crook County, Wyoming, just out of Sundance, Wyoming, January the 26th, 1893.
Well, you're younger than my mother.
Is that right? Yeah. It's wonderful.
When did you come to this area?
I came in February of 1917.
So you had grown up in the...
I was 24 when I came to Rapid City.
Did you grow up on a ranch or in town? Or?
I was born out in an old log cabin out in the shadow of the Devil's Tower. When it rained, my mother said the only dry spot was under the stove. My folks were pioneers. But when I was 8 years old, we moved to town. My brother and sister went to school in the country, but I never did. I went to school in town in Sundance.
Were your folks ranchers at first?
Well, my father raised horses. My mother was born in New York City, my father in Illinois. They met in Ohio. They met in Illinois, were married there, and they had their first two children there. My mother lost her first baby at 6 months or 6 weeks, and my brother that came to the country with them was killed with lightning. They came in 1887, and he was killed with lightning in 1890 at school. But I had a younger brother that I knew that was born in Iowa, and he came out. They left Clarendon to Iowa on the first day of April, 1887. And they were just my mother and father and my two brothers. And then we had a cousin, father, mother, raised his. He lost his parents, and then there was one other man. And they had three covered wagons and trailed 20 head of horses. They took the first Clydesdales and Perchins into Wyoming.
First Clydesdales and Perchins. Did you say they left Clinton, Iowa?
Mm-hmm.
Let's see how we're...
Clarinda, Iowa. That's fast, I used to.
We all have that problem. After your folks moved into Sundance, was your dad still raising horses?
Well, we still had horses on the ranch. He stayed with the ranch a good deal of the time. We'd go out on weekends and in the summertime. Then we'd come back to town in the winter. But then he finally sold off all the horses, and then we all moved into town.
What did he do there?
Well, it was a difficult time. But they not too many things to do. He worked at different things. He still handled horses. But we had a... Of course, Sundance is just a small town, you know. It's about 400. I don't know that it was even 400 when we lived there. So Father did whatever he could. And, oh, we took boarders. My mother always took in boarders, and my sister worked in the telephone office. She went to work at the telephone office when she was 13 years old. She was the first operator up there.
Yeah, is that right?
With a little switchboard with 80 drops on it.
How wonderful. So then you moved to Rapid City and...
We lived there from the time that I went into school when I was 8 and until we came down here yesterday in 1970.
What was your maiden name?
Hamilton.
Hamilton.
My father was James Hamilton, and my mother was Jane Herder. That was her maiden name.
Herder?
Herder, H-U-R-D-E-R.
And were you married when you came to Rapid City?
No, sir. No, I came down and went to business college. I was teaching over in Wyoming. I taught for 5 years. I taught 3 years in the country. Had my first school, I had 8 grades and 25 children. And you know, in the country, you're the janitor. You build your own fires. You wash your boards.
You carried the water. You carried the garbage.
Yeah, we had a bucket of water with a dipper.
Mm-hmm.
And you got $40 a month.
And how long was the school year?
The winters were very severe up there, so we started in early April and went to the end of November. We had the summer terms.
Mm-hmm.
And we had that same school. My first school, I I boarded out in the country. There was just one place to take the teacher. She was a Republican, Boston Republican, and he was a Terryville taxi driver. And they used to have political fights over politics.
How far were you from school then?
Well, at their house, we walked 4 miles. It was 2 miles down, but we walked 4 miles a day. But the next year, I taught the same school, but I stayed home. It was 7 miles out of town, and I rode horseback 14 miles a day.
When you lived 2 miles away, did you walk?
Yes, we walked. Mm-hmm. We did have an old horse and cart that we used to take sometimes, but we could almost beat the time by walking.
You said that school year was from April to November.
Mm-hmm. End of November.
What were the hours during the day? When did you start? When did you
We quit? Started regular at 9 o'clock in the morning, and we had an hour off at noon, and then it was out at 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
What did the parents think about taking the kids off the farms during the summer?
Well, they were very cooperative. There was no trouble with that because most of the children, I had a boy that was 15. Of course, some of the children in the country don't get to go as regularly as kids in town. But I had a boy 15 and a girl 14 that were big enough to work in the field, but they never were kept out for that purpose. One family had 12 youngsters. I had 6 of them in school.
Then when you came to Rapid City, you went to business college. Mm-hmm. And then did you work?
I started work in the Chamber of Commerce. I knew no one when I came down here. The reason I happened to come, my sister and her husband, Mr. and Mrs. Herbert Brockett, he was a businessman here. He worked in the bank and with Rushmore Insurance.
What was his name, Herbert Brockett?
Herbert Brockett.
Would you spell that?
It's B-R-O-C-K-E-T-T. They were good Episcopalians.
All right.
He had a brother, Ted, down here, but they were down here. And it really wasn't, it was a difficult thing for me because there wasn't too many things in Wyoming for a girl to do. And teaching, I really wasn't prepared for it. I only had one year of college. But I tried very hard to give the youngsters the very basic things because a lot of them I knew would never go beyond that country school.
Where did you go to college?
Spearfish.
At the Black Hills State.
Mm-hmm. I just got to go 1 year because my father was killed in 1911. A stallion kicked him. It wasn't our horse. And today he would have lived, but he just hemorrhaged to death. And I was 17 when my father was killed. But then when I came down here, I went to business college, and I had this opportunity to go in the Chamber of Commerce. They paid practically nothing, but it gave me a chance to get acquainted with the businessmen.
What was your job there?
I did a lot of stenography work because I had taken up, when I went to business college, I had had some shorthand and typing when I was taking my teacher's course in Spearfish. But it was a stenographic job. And then answering all kinds of questions, we had the Girls and Boys Club Leader in there. I think that was the beginning of the 4-H Club, really, because they had calf clubs and chicken clubs and pig clubs, and the Boys and Girls Club Leader was in there. And then the county agent also had offices in there. And then, of course, the secretary of the Chamber of Commerce is one that I really worked for. But of course, it was during the war.
What brand of shorthand did you use?
Munson.
Munson.
Mm-hmm. I took that business college. It was a 6-week course.
Mm-hmm. What was the name of the business college?
It was the Rapid City Business College.
Okay. What was the name of the Black Hills State College at that time?
That was the Spearfish Normal.
Spearfish Normal. Mm-hmm.
It was a teacher's college. And it was only 2 years, but it became 4 years the very year I was there in 1911 and 12.
Going back to your job at the Chamber of Commerce, do you remember what your wages were at that time?
Well, I'll tell you, I think I got $5 a week. I was supposed to get to make up the rest of it by doing public stenography.
Mm-hmm.
But that was absolutely impossible. They'd come in, you write a letter and give you 10 cents.
Mm-hmm.
The first really job I had, they were building the high school at that time.
And one of the big
beg pardon?
The first what job?
The first really big job that I started to have was a contractor on the business or on the high school over here, but what is now the
college
junior. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it was all, he brought in all his figures, you know, pages and pages of them. And I could have done it, but he sat down right beside me. And I couldn't, you know, with figures, I never had gotten to the point I could do that without looking. Mm-hmm. The rest I could manage that. But I did one page, and he sat right there. I finally just took it out and handed it to him. I said, I just can't work under these circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't stay there for long. I got a chance to go over to the coal office. It was Rapid City SC, McRoy's coal office. And there I did all the stenographic work, and I did all the bookkeeping, and did all the collecting. Those days you went out and collected, you didn't send bills.
Mm-hmm.
And at that period of time, we had quite a good many Chinese in Rapid. All that west end of Main Street was an awful lot of Chinese. The old Patton Hotel there on the corner of 9th and Main was run by Chinese, and it was a good many. They did various things. Of course, a lot of it was laundry and various things.
And for $5 a week, you worked how many hours a day?
I went to work at 8 o'clock in the morning and worked till 5. And then while I was there, I got a chance to take a job to J.L. Robinson Stearns. So I would leave there, and this was during the war, I held down two jobs. I worked at the Chamber of Commerce, and I'd go over there and do up all the bookworking and the bookkeeping and the stenographic work after I left there. And then my mother and my brother and sister had both gone for the summer, so I was here. I had the two bird dogs. And I'd go eat at this Chinese restaurant or at the hotel to get a lovely steak and everything to go with it for 50 cents.
When you were collecting, did you have any adventures?
Well, I tell you, it was a strange thing. It's funny. It's like paying for a dead horse. People, poor Mrs. Gossage, AG, that run the journal, she was editor of the journal. She was one of the most difficult people of us to ever collect from. And bless her heart, you know, she was a very generous person. She'd come over and buy 50 cents worth of coal to send to some poor family. But when you go to collect the bill over there, she even accused me of giving her short tons. And I said, Mrs. Garcia, it was down on St. Joe Street, and it was an old block, the old Schnassy block, and it was all kinds of people rooming up there. It was just kind of a hodgepodge. And she had the coal delivered out in big wood bins outdoors, you know, and she never had a key on it. And I said, Mrs. Garcia, she said, that coal just didn't last. I said, did you ever think of locking that bin? She said, I never thought of such a thing. But bless her heart, I think they were stealing her blind.
What was the name of the building?
It was Old Schnassy, S-C-H-N-A-S-S-E. It's that block now that's between 6th and 7th block. It's on the right-hand side of St. Joe Street as you go east. There's in there now, there's, I can't think what's all along in there.
Woolworth.
Well, it used to be Woolworth, but there's these... I can't say just right now.
Well, it doesn't matter. Were your folks Episcopalians?
No, my mother was a Congregationalist, and of course, when we came out to Wyoming, we had no church. Mm-hmm. They used to get together and have kind of church meetings, but we had Episcopal church in Sundance, but we had so few members that. Everybody went to we had a Methodist church, and that's where I grew up in. I never joined it, however. I didn't like some of the things there, but that's where I went to Sunday school, and we all went to church there. As I say, with our Episcopal church, we went, but we so seldom had a minister. They couldn't, they wasn't able to. It was a beautiful little church, and it's still there, still standing.
What church did your father favor?
Well, they were both congregations, yes, sir.
How did you get involved with the Episcopal Church?
with the young man I stopped to go with, Mr. March. When I first came down here, we had Bishop Remington was here, and his wife had been an entertainer during the war. She was really a professional speaker and storyteller. She was they were really a wonderful couple. The church was full, not too many members. And then I met Mr. March off the School of Mines.
Was he teaching?
Yes. Well, he was going to school at that time.
What was his first name?
Guy.
Guy March.
Guy Ernest.
Guy Ernest March.
He was born and raised up Hill City. And he was going, well, you see, this was after this. The war was declared the 7th day of April, 1917, when I can remember that so well, because the old Rapid City Journal, there on St. Joe Street, you see, we had, of course, no TV or in that kind of business, and they'd always put all these AP bulletins up in the windows, and there'd always be a host of people around that reading the very latest news, you know.
Did they have boys out on the street yelling, extra, extra, and
yes.
All about it?
Yes, they did.
What did the paper cost at that time?
I think it was $1.50 a month.
You bought it on the street, what did it cost?
Well, it was delivered. It was delivered to homes for that thing.
I mean, if you bought it from a newsboy.
I think it was 15 cents. I never did that because we had it delivered to the house.
What was your husband, your future husband, studying?
He was a math teacher. He was a math major, but he really finished in electrical engineering out of school. That was his major. But when he came back after the war, you see, he didn't get to finish. He went into the service before he finished, and when he came back, he went back to school and finished in 1922. And started to teach that fall at the mines. And we were married that spring. We were married the spring of 1922.
What was the date? I bet you remember that.
July the 1st. I couldn't quite make June.
So he got you started going to the Episcopal Church.
Yeah, we started going. And that's when I joined, and all my children were brought up at Episcopal Church. And Terry was, my daughter who lives here, was married there in the Episcopal Church, and her children were baptized. No, they weren't baptized there. But after she married, they all went over into this new area over here with Robbinsdale, and a lot of, so many young couples from very different denominations. And they all got together, and they built a little church over there. It was a congregational. And that's where my daughter and her family were raised.
Her name is Terry?
Terry Thorson.
Terry Thorson.
Her husband is Don Thorson. He taught out of the mines. He just retired from the mines this last a year ago.
Can you remember your first visit to Emmanuel Church?
Well, I had gone. Yes, I can. I remember going to the Episcopal Church in Sundance, and then when I was at Spearfish going to school, I went to the Episcopal Church all the time I was down there, and I remember one particular instance. No, that wasn't. We went with another girl. This was at Spearfish. She was Catholic, and I was going with a lad. And she was the only one who was Catholic, but she wanted to go to church with us this one Sunday. And we did. And we had one of the boys with us. And when they went into the Catholic church, boys went to pray. When you go in, you used to dip in the holy water, you know. And he thought that was the collection box, and he dropped in a quarter.
and
I'll never forget that. And, you know, we got convulsed, and, of course, it was nothing about the church. And there was two Negro women sat in front of us. And it's a terrible thing to say, but they had graybacks. We're calling it. There were very few colored people around here at that time, you know. But I never will forget that, Chad. They were all dressed up just as nice, but I'd never seen such a thing.
This was at Emmanuel?
No, this was at Spearfish, first time. I mean, he was good. But here, I went the first time, I think, with Daddy. I was kind of overawed. Because I was raised in the country, you know. I guess you were. And shy. And, you know, you didn't go. You went Batane, wherever you went, you know. It was a sheltered life. Going to Spearfish was like going to New York today to me. But I wouldn't give anything for all those experiences. I remember my mother was in Wyoming put near 6 months before she ever saw another woman.
Yeah, is that right?
Cowboys. But I'll tell you, the old-time cowboy was one of the finest men that ever lived. They show these drugstore cowboys in these movies and things. It makes me so disgusted because...
He was a real gentleman.
They had their hat off before they were in the mile of a lady. And you never heard any... I never heard my father swear. Never in my life. And he worked with horses. But, you know, things have changed. This language business of today just...
Did you, when you first started going to the Episcopal Church, did you have any problems about kneeling and...
No, when I found out what I was supposed to put, but I just watched the others. I learned a lot by watching.
Didn't bother you?
No, it didn't. I liked it. I still do.
So, when you came to Emmanuel, who was the minister there?
Bishop Remington.
Bishop Remington. Mm-hmm. And how... At that time, they had not built the chancel. What is now the chancel? They had not built the...
No, you see, they built... Well, the chancel was there, but they didn't have the parish house. Mm-hmm. The parish house was built when Mr. Pipes was here.
Oh, yeah.
He was the little minister that came from Carolina. Blowing Rock, Colorado. Carolina.
Mm-hmm. So... What was the size of the congregation then?
Well, we didn't. It wasn't a very big. It was very small, and there was very few people would work. I was chairman of the guild, and really, you know, and we had a very active men's club, and which met once a month, and of course we charged 50 cents, you know, and we really gave really good, wonderful meals. I just often think how. There were people around town. I knew Mr. Rose Marketura, the manager there, used to give us a ham or a pound of coffee or something for church, and he was a Catholic. But that's the way that most of it was. I came from the Rose Marketura grocery store.
Jim Haley from the Rose Marketeer.
About Marketeria.
Marketeria.
Grocery store. It was there on the corner of St. Joe and Ninth.
And although he was a Catholic, he would give you food for these church dinners. And you give the men's, you're feeding the men's club now.
Yes.
The ladies are feeding the men's club and charging 50 cents.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I remember Mr. Gore. She and I taught Sunday school together. He was a professor out at the School of Mines. And when he was chairman of the men's club, he put an ad in the paper. Church dinner, all you can eat for 50 cents, and we never did that, you know. It was just among our members. We had members because we had to have some idea how many we were going to have.
And he didn't even tell you.
He didn't even tell us. Well, we got so many came, and I think we had one ham, and we had a few cans of beans. Our own members went downtown. And Mr. Gore was the original absent-minded professor.
What was his first name?
Bancroft. Now, we got two of his daughters here in church today.
Bancroft
Gore. He was head of the Met Department out of school. He has two daughters here. This comes to our church. Is Roselba Oiger.
Noor.
And
Blanche.
And Blanche. She goes by the name of Gore, I think that was her, but she was married, but I can't
Blanche
remember.
Blanche Shreve.
Yes, that's right.
He was the original absent-minded professor, you were saying. Mm-hmm. So he put this ad in the paper and then forgot to tell
you. Yeah, and if we didn't have a time, we just didn't have the food, you know. I mean, there's no way of getting it. So I remember Daddy had asked Hector Guest that night, one of the boys from school. Well, he took his boy. Most of our members went downtown and they fed them. We fed the ones that just came in. Of course, we only got 50 cents a piece. And I was chairman. I told Mr. Gore, I said, they would never do that again. He said, well, I thought you wanted a crowd. But he took his girls up to a basketball game at Deadwood one night, left them, and come on home.
Forgot about it.
And he walked in the house. His wife said, well, Beth, where's the girls? He says, Deadwood. She said, she never dared to leave the children with him. He'd get to thinking about something out of school and just go off and leave, you know. They moved and he couldn't find the place. He wondered he didn't get shot. He went around looking in all the windows to see where they moved to. They stayed at the hotel first. But everybody loved him. He was a beloved professor. He'd go out and get out of the car in the morning at school, leave the door open, and come back at night, and the car would be full of snow. Well, how'd that come, you? But he just was.
So, was the chairman of the women's club, now was this ECW, did you say?
No, we had the auxiliary, this one, and then we had Emmanuel Guild, and then the auxiliary. They were two different groups. And while Mr. Pipes was here, we finally divided it into different groups. We had St. Anne's and St. Margaret's and St. Cecilia's and all different groups, so we got more people working. When Mr. Pipes came, it was really, we had a man in between, Reverend, I said that name today, but it come to me.
Remington?
But our church went,
Man between Remington and Pipes?
Yes. That really, our church had gone downhill just an awful long ways. The paper was hanging on the walls. It was, Prosser was his name. He came here, from Minnesota. But the man never wanted to be a minister. His father had been a minister, and he just kind of insisted on him. And it just wasn't his... It was really... We just got pure run down. But when Mr. Pipes came, he was here, 35 years. He did a wonderful job, and it didn't end up too well. The only bad thing about Mr. Pipes, he couldn't work with somebody else. We never had an assistant. And he was, Mr. Marsh was very active in Boy Scouting, and we had a wonderful troop at Troop 6 at school, or at the church. And they went down in the basement there, and they picked up scout rooms, they built stools, they did everything. But Mr. Pipes just kind of resented it all the time. He thought if the scouts went out and didn't come to Sunday school, but that wasn't the way it was done, you know. But we had quite a little, and I started a, we started, I wouldn't say we, I, but we started a Canterbury Club. And we had about 20 boys and girls, and lots of those were School of Mines kids. And they didn't want to come for entertainment.
Canterbury Club.
A Canterbury
for
Club.
College age
And we had about 20 members, and you know, they were all serious-minded kids. They wanted to come and learn more about the church. But you know, Mr. Pipes resented that. He resented anything we did with that. I felt so hurt one night. We had a big meeting, and we had it over to Palmerton's that night. And Palmerton's, they come to our church, Leighton Palmerton's. We had that meeting at their house that night. Palmerton, P-A-L-M-E-R-T-O-N.
Is that the doctor?
Yes. Well, these two doctors, both of them are doctors. One is an eye specialist, another was a retired professor out at School of Mines. Mm. There's Leighton is one that comes to our church.
Leighton. Mm-hmm.
And Ruth. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, that night, it's just a nice meeting, and Mr. Pipes, he said, now, we won't meet again. We had our officers all elected. He said, we won't meet again now in spring. Well, one of our older boys got up and said, well, Mr. Pipes, how can we do? And he says, when you go home at Christmas time, you can tell your folks that we have a Canterbury Club. But they didn't want to meet anymore. He didn't want to take that time. Mm-hmm. He married my daughter. I like Mr. Pipes. Maybe we just shouldn't even talk about this. It turned out kind of sad. We had another man come into the church. And they didn't hitch because Mr. Pipes wouldn't let him do things.
As an assistant?
Mm-hmm. And he was a sister to Mrs., one of our fine members down. He was a brother I met to her. You see, names don't come to me like they used to. Nettie. They're both very active in our church now. It was her brother.
For long?
No, not Betty Furlong. No, this was Nettie.
Oh, Nettie Rambo.
Yes. It was her brother.
Caton,
that's right. Mm-hmm. But that just didn't work out at all. It just got the church divided. It was just pitiful. Mm-hmm. But it's that, as a whole, I think we got an awfully good man now. I think he does a wonderful job. And we had one before. But Father King was another fine man that we had here, and you know he's dying with emphysema. He's the Bishop of Idaho, Bishop, you know. Mm-hmm. He was a very fine man. We went out when he was became bishop. We were on our way to California to alumni. We traveled for the alumni all these summers during the years that we were out there. And we were on our way to California, so we went early so we could be there for his ordination.
That was in Idaho, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. At Boise, it was beautiful, but one of the most beautiful services I
ever... What year was that?
Oh, dear. Must have been about 19... I think 70, but maybe that's maybe it's later. No, it seems 70 to me.
We can check that, 1970.
But there was bishops there, from Bishop of New York, just from all over. It was just a beautiful service. And but Father King has emphysema, and I was just talking to Mrs. Moore Sunday, and she said that he's very, very bad now. So, we had the man after him. We had a bad time with too. He just almost, it just divided. The people just left the church, and some of them never have come back.
What was his name?
We have prayers for his grandson every Sunday. Isn't that ridiculous? I can't see him.
Yeah. Well, that'll be on the record.
It's just as well.
Yeah, that'll be on the record. Mm-hmm. Now that brings us up to Father Anderson now.
Let's see. Yes. Yes, after he left, we got Father Anderson. It took him near 6 months to find Father Anderson. But, and then he brought in, we had different ones. Some younger ones. Well, we had some younger ones, Father Bishop. Was here. Some awfully nice young men that went from here. And then, of course, he brought Father Cyril in here. Mm-hmm. I never did know what happened there, and I guess I don't want to know. I liked them very much. But some, I don't know what that was. And Father Tim, you know, that went to... And I think he was leaving that church, too.
Mm-hmm. He's going for more study now.
Yes, he is. Mm-hmm. He was a fine young man. They were just a wonderful couple. Were you here when they were here?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How long have you been here?
7 years.
7 years.
Going back to one of the early days, what one thing in relation to the church stands out in your memory? What would be the outstanding thing in the church?
I have to think of
this. You're saying that the outstanding event was when you were divided into gifts.
Well, yes, I think because it really brought in more people to work. They did. Now, we had some of them played cards, some of them sewed, some of them studied. They all did different things to raise money for the church. We had an older group, and we played cards, and then we played, everybody paid a dollar for every time they come, and all that money. And then at the Christmas, and whatever the prize was for playing bridge, that all went into the church. And then we paid $10 a year. That all went into, that was our contribution to the church. Because a lot of us, there was a time when there were so few people that ever go down and work, you know. They're all too big for the kitchen. They don't want to ever work in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
There was always everybody, they just assumed wait till, but the women didn't want to work in the kitchen, but some of the old girls. We did that a lot of the times, but it was very nice for me when I was chairman because Guy was president of the men's club at the same time. So he gave me a lot of help coming down and setting up tables. And we didn't have anything to work with. We had to take our own dishes and things down. We had just practically nothing to work with down there. Beg pardon?
You had to bring your dishes.
Yeah, all the committees bring our dishes and different things. And we had an old range in there that had a hump in the bottom. You couldn't put a custard pie or anything, you know. And it didn't have a pilot light. You'd have to turn it on and throw a match in. You think you're going to get your head bowed off every time. We didn't even have a coffee pot. We made coffee in a boiler. We didn't have hot water. We had heat water to moisture our dishes with. We had just nothing back there. And when we finally got the parish house, it was just that. I think that was maybe a highlight, I should say, because we at least had a place to meet, and it was, they had more rooms for Sunday school. And then, of course, when we enlarged the church, you know, That was after President Roosevelt was here. Yes, or was it before or after? Let me think of it. That was 36 when he was here. That was quite a highlight for the church.
I was going to ask you what you could remember about President Roosevelt's visit.
Well, it really was a... I just never will forget that. Guy was ushered there for 40 years, you know, 50 years, my husband. And Bellamy's had a big... I think it was a big packet, but we had iron fences around the church, and then there was a double gate out of the yard front. You see, the parish house was not there. And they had this big double gate there, and they opened that gate, and they drove that big packet right into the yard and backed it up toward the stairs.
This was a
Packard? I think it was a Packard. It was a great big car, anyway.
Owned by whom, did you say?
It was the FBI. Well, it belonged to Paul Bellamy. Paul Bellamy was one that he was really a promoter here. He did a lot of things for Rapid City. I think he was really back with getting Roosevelt here in the first place. But I don't think anybody, of course, they were very particular about anybody taking pictures. Only when it was just right. And it was Secret Service man. His name was Blackie. He was a great big fella. I wasn't out there, but my husband was there. And my Bob, my own son, was here this church with me. He was carried the flag that morning, so he was with the choir. And when they backed up that car, this Blackie went up and they opened up the doors, and he just took a hold of the president's legs and just pulled him out, just yanked him out, and stood him up, got him kind of under the arms. And then they fastened these steel braces that were on his legs. And we had all the instructions before he came, what had to be done. We had to build a special, Mr. Thompson, who was a good Englishman out of school of mines, he was superintendent of buildings out there. He built railings on the front porch. They had to be just exactly a certain height and a certain width, because all his power, he had no use in his legs whatsoever. He had to use it all by power to swing himself up. And I still couldn't get the idea of that board that morning that we had this thing. Of course, I didn't see that. I didn't.
I missed something. You didn't back up the sensor. You see all that?
When they brought in that, what they said that he walked up on the steps a couple of Sundays ago when we celebrated.
A ramp.
Yeah, a ramp, that's what I should have said. I have no recollection. But maybe that... because we were requested to sit in front of him. And so Terry, this girl was here. She and I sat there. I can't remember whether Daddy ever came and sat down or not, because he was ushering. But the president sat right behind us. I remember it was a time that you didn't want to even... I never even turned my head, because I felt they were so... Not secretive, but protective of him, you know. His daughter, or his son, and a daughter-in-law, and another son. There were three of them there. And during the services, Mr. Pipes never made any special mention that the president was there. And our flag was kind of ragged. It was gotten pretty badly worn. Well, when they went out, the last picture that was taken in front of the church, you know, you've seen that. He was standing by Mr. Pipes. Of course, Mr. Pipes was this little guy, you know. He was a little guy with a big voice. And he turned to Mr. Pipes and he said, "I so appreciate that you didn't make any fuss about me being there." And he said, but of course, we had special prayers for the president like we do every Sunday, you know. But he turned kind of said in a whisper to him, Mr. Pipes told us afterwards. He said, "But we Episcopalians know how to do things."
We Episcopalians know how to do things. That's good.
It was, but they couldn't even have a throw rug. He couldn't have even put his foot. They had to be no double rugs or anything. But he had to just be flat. And when he got in there, they just unfastened, and he just cracked. But these strong arms, he had a tremendous strength because he was a big man.
Did he walk up the ramp?
I was not there. They brought him up to that, and then he got a hold of his son's out there. I don't know what his son's. He's when they got up the steps, he got a hold of those railings. They were about so wide and built very staunchly. You know, they were really built. And just he just swung himself up.
He didn't use a wheelchair at all?
No.
Now, when Calvin Coolidge was in town, did he go to our church?
No. He attended the little church in Hermosa. He was a Congregationalist. And this church here, they renovated the place and painted the papers, got all ready for him to come to church, you know. And the little Congregational church in Hermosa, because he was the game lodge, you know. He came in there and stopped there the very first Sunday. And they had a student minister for the summer. And he didn't know he was coming until just an hour or so before they arrived. And the Secret Service came to and told him that the president was coming. A lot of poor kids, you know. But it really made him. He became quite famous, and that's where they attended church ever since. They never did come in here.
Now, I have seen a photograph in the Hard Rocker, the School of Mines magazine, of Calvin Coolidge in front of our church. Do you know what that was all about?
In front of our church?
In front of our church.
Well, it was, I can't remember. Of course, you know, my husband and I printed that Hard Rock. This is the first time it's never been printed by us. We had that Hard Rock all these years. And we have one of these big things that they pounded in the Rushmore. Those iron pegs that Borglum gave to Coolidge.
The steel drill?
Not the drill, but the pegs that go in.
Peg.
I don't know what you call them. But I think they still got that out to school. Coolidge. And I had...
This is not a cutting tool, but...
It's steel. Iron. Iron pin. We had a picture of Mr. Borglum gave him that to Coolidge. And I think that was out in front of the high school.
I do. Steel peg to Coolidge. Okay.
And
you think that's still at the school?
I think they still have it out there. Well, I have an interesting story along with that.
Okay.
We have a man by the name of Ed Coolidge. He graduated out the School of Mines in about 1909.
Name is what now?
Coolidge, the same.
Coolidge.
And when President Coolidge was here, he was a mining man. He was up in Montana. Billings. Anyway, he was a mining man, and he had a button of gold that he gave to Coolidge. It was a heat mine up there, and Coolidge didn't want to take it. I knew Ed was an old friend of ours. I knew him real well because he was graduated long before I did, or long before we came here. But he's back many times as an alumnus, you know, so we knew him real well, and Guy knew him particularly well. So... But Coolidge said, I'll take it on one condition, that when I die, it'll come back to you. So when Coolidge died, it came back to Ed. And Ed made a trip down, Great Falls, Montana is where he was.
Mm-hmm.
He made a trip down here and gave it to Guy.
Mm-hmm.
And just this last year, I gave that to my son. It had the amount, the weights and the whole thing on it. It was a gold button about like that, and kind of thick. But the history behind the thing. But Ed wanted Guy to have that above all things. And it's so many things like that. I told Bob, I said, when you get real hard up, you can sell it. But you get those sort of things, and what do you do with them?
Now, what about Eisenhower? Did Eisenhower ever come to our church?
No, he didn't. The only time I can remember when Eisenhower was going up to Rushmore, when he was going out, he went through here. They met him at the plane, and I had my little grandson. They were in Colorado at the time. Their oldest boy was just a little guy, and I had the two children here. They were going to come home shortly, but I had them here, so we went over. He went up to 8th Street, you know. And we took the children all. Everybody went over to see him go by. It was just he never stopped here that I knew of. But anyway, I said, Bill, will you go early so we get a good place? Because I said, everybody and his dog would be there. Well, we went over and we come home. Craigie was just about maybe 3-4 years old. He was just a little guy. And he looked at me kind of quizzically and he said, Grandma, you said everybody and his dog would be there. And he said, I never saw but one dog.
From the mouths of babes. Oh, that's wonderful.
But I can remember, you know, Lindbergh flew over when Coolidge was here. I was out on my, we lived over on Fulton Street at the time, and I remember he flew over and dipped down to the sky, you know. And I saw him, I was out on my, with my refrigerator. But he just dipped down, but they had lots of doings up the high school, because that was the White House, really, where they had their offices, you know, he'd come in every morning.
Lindbergh flying the Spirit of St. Louis at that time? So you saw the Spirit of St. Louis come by?
Well, I've seen it in the Smithsonian, too. We've traveled a lot to see during all these years. We visited.
This is continuing the interview with Gail March. She was just saying that she had been in every state except Alaska.
We drove in the summer. I was a navigator. I never drove.
Watched the map.
I watched the map all the signs and the numbers. And you know, it's been a wonderful life, though, with this school connection. I'm quite disturbed about the situation right now. I don't know where we're headed.
About the school of mines?
I've been there 64 years. 64 years ago last fall that I stepped on that campus as a bride of 2 months. Mm-hmm. And we didn't even have... This doesn't come into your part of the story that you want, does it?
Well, go ahead. It's interesting.
We didn't have 100 enrolled at that time. We only had 3 buildings, and there wasn't a sidewalk. You know, it was gumbo. At that end of town, it's just straight gumbo. There was a reason for the boys wearing mining boots, you know.
Did the girls wear?
They weren't girls. We had very few girls that ever came. At that, I think at one time we did have 10, but that was a big majority. We didn't have, because it was really an engineering school, and girls weren't taking engineers those days, you know. And so many people now, they say, why is it that you have all these boyfriends? And I said, well, we didn't have girls. But I remember when we got up to 100, we got out the band and had a parade and took the day off and celebrated when we got 100 enrolled. But it was like a big family. No, I can't. I can't remember just when we got. I got a lot of history in these Black Hills Engineers.
It was after you were married.
Oh, yes, indeed. And during the war, we had, we had this AST program, SATC, that was during World War I. And that was the Student Army Training Corps. Boys that didn't, well, the government sold them a bill of goods, you know, to come down here. They'd get out and they came down here. They had about 100 enrolled in that Student Army Training Corps during World War I. The ones that really waited in service called them the Saturday Afternoon Tea Club.
Saturday Afternoon Tea Club.
But it was such a wonderful time, you know. It took both faculty and students to have a party, you know. We had dances, we had picnics, and you know. And did you see in the paper? They're not going to have any. They're not going to allow them to. They don't have to wear the green beanies. They're not going to have the mudslide. The faculty went away with them day. That's just been a tradition ever since, long before I got there. I didn't care. I didn't think much of the mudslide, but I think this idea of what they're doing, I shouldn't even get into this. My heart is within that I've lost more sleep over that school than anything I ever lost sleep over.
Just lately?
Well, yes, just lately, because it was just, I think we're in a bad way. I think our schools all the way. I can't understand this idea about our schools, the way how things are going. I just don't know where I should never get into this, because I've been into this up to my neck. Because I tell you, when it was just a foregone thing. When you went in there, you know, we had guy graduated that spring and he started to teach that fall. Well, we were on first name basis with all the underclassmen, you know. But it just remained that way. So we always associated more with the alumni and the students than we ever did the faculty. We attended all faculty things because we had a very strong faculty women's club, and I still am an honorary member. And all the things we did, you know, we put on benefits and, well, like just like at the church, we had rummage sales, and we had luncheons and all that way to make money for the church because money was scarce, I'll tell you. And you take the early 20s and 30s. Our kids were coming to school. They had pasteboard in their shoe and don't think they didn't. And then you see the things that they have done, the contributions that they have made to the world from that little school. It's unbelievable.
Going back to the church, you mentioned the problems you had before. You mentioned the lack of facilities before they built the guild hall. Now, was there any basement under the original church?
Yes, it was. That was a basement.
And that was where you had your meetings and your Sunday school?
Well, no, we had our Sunday school. I guess they had, well, a little later they had some classes. I don't know if they ever had classes down there or not. I guess maybe they did. My Sunday school class we had in the church, we divided it up.
In the church?
Uh-huh.
Where did you have your dinners and your meetings?
Well, we didn't. Before we never had them till after we got we never had big dinners or men's club till after we got the parish house because we had no place to meet.
Now, is this the only parish house, or have they enlarged the parish house?
No, they enlarged the church, but the parish house remained the same. They built that. That was when Mr. Pipes was here. But they almost doubled the church, but they kept it exactly like it was. But one summer, Daddy didn't have a job. Of course, we were just paid 10 months out of the year those years. And we had a little man come in here he was from over the eastern part of the state, but he was just labor. But he was born and died Episcopalian. So Guy got a hold of him, and they worked in that. Daddy worked in that church all summer. That's the way he did our contribution. They varnished all those big
beams
and the woodwork. And all the pews, and they had been people there when Mr. Prosser was there. It was hanging off of the wall. And our church was in awful shape.
The wallpaper was.
And they took it all off, and then they had plaster, and they stippled it because the walls were. It was very bum plaster was put on, but they stippled it. They took two different colors, and you just stick it on after you paint it, and so it doesn't show the cracks. They worked there all summer. The children just went down there all the time with him. But it was such a nice... And as I say, Mr. Pipes did an awful lot for the church. It was such a sad thing when things turned out the way they did, because everybody loved Mr. Pipes. But he just had that... He could not work with another minister. And we needed it the worst, because Mr. Pipes had a bad heart, you know.
And this caused the presence of the assistant caused division.
Mm-hmm. It did, just divided the church.
And Mr. Pipes left under those conditions?
Well, he died. He didn't leave here. He died.
Mm-hmm. But it was during this?
During that period of time.
Probably contributed to it.
Then they lived out. Mrs. Pipes was a lover of nature. She had sheep. She had guinea hens. She had bloodhounds. She had a cow. She had a donkey. Chickens, all kinds of fancy chickens. She never lived in the parish house here. They lived out. They lived up in the South Canyon for a while, and then they lived out on, you go out Rapid Canyon, they lived out there. They never lived in town because she just loved animals, parrots, she had every kind of thing that you could think of.
Did they have any children?
One son.
You mentioned they never lived in the parish house. Did they church home?
Yes, they had a little parish house there. I don't think it's there anymore. I believe it's been torn down. But just they did own that little house.
Where was that?
It was up in the next block. It was just a little gray house.
It wasn't.
It wasn't right close to the church. It was not too far from the church, but they never lived there. Prosser did, I think. I think they lived there when they were here. They had 3 or 4 children.
Well, that must have been quite something, trying to put meals on this old rickety old stove.
You can't. It really was something. We just didn't have a thing to do with it down there.
Did the church have electricity in it when you came?
Yes. Yes, they had. They did have lights. It was very much like it is now. They made it a little bit bigger, but it was the same. It looks the same. The windows and everything was. It's always been. I always thought it was such a pretty little church. Well, we've had lots of lovely times down there, and it's my son, he still stayed with the church, but Terry and her husband, as I say, they all went over to this other church, but give me credit, I said nothing. I thought that's their life. A lot of the young couples all just, I think they even had Catholics. They was Presbyterians, they was Baptists, they was, every combination went in there, and it became a congregational church. There's another name that they kind of went into. I can't exactly tell you. So I say, I would have done these things 20 years ago when I could think better.
When you mention your daughter's name, would you spell it for me? Is it Terry or Carrie?
Well, it really is Theresa.
Theresa.
It's her right name, but she goes with the name of Terry.
Terry
and Don Thorson.
You have 5 children. How many children do you have?
I just had the 2 of them, son and daughter.
Son and the daughter, and they gave you how many grandchildren?
5.
5 grandchildren.
My son didn't have any children.
And so you probably have some great-grandchildren by now.
I don't have one. I couldn't. And they've been married. 2 of them have been married from 1970, and I don't have any great-grandchildren. Well, one of my granddaughters, she taught in Paris for 10 years. She was a language major, and she went over there, and she taught in Paris for 10 years. She taught 1 year in Morocco, but she's back here now, and she teaches French and Spanish at the business college.
Yes,
she's married and is here now. She married a young attorney here. They came out to Sundance.
We're talking about Gail's sister and her husband who came to Rapid City. And the sister's name was?
Anna Brockett.
Brockett.
Mm-hmm. Her husband was Herbert Brockett.
Herbert Brockett. And they went to our church?
Mm-hmm.
Did they live here a long time?
Yes, they did. Herb died in 1952, but they came here. I came in 17, and they came the fall before. They came in 16.
Did you live with them?
Yes, I did until I was married. Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. And how long did your sister live?
She was she died in 1978. She was 78, isn't that right? Yes, about 78.
Now, were your children married in the church?
Terry was, but my Bob was married during the war, and he was married out in California.
Mm-hmm. And have some of your grandchildren been baptized there?
No, not. They were all baptized over in their other church.
I see.
In the church where they went.
Mm-hmm. What was the date of your husband's death?
July the 1st, 1981.
1981.
Yes.
So he was...
July the 17th, I think that. July the 1st is when we were married, but he died on the 17th of July.
How old was he?
86.
86. There is a slight interruption in the interview with Gail March at this point. Please continue with the transcription.
But we'd be happy to pay for it.
All right, we'll get a copy.
Because it would help me. Now, there's all my grandchildren up there.
Well, that's a fine-looking crew.
That's their mother in the middle.
Mm-hmm. We'll get a copy for you.
Well, I would just, I would be glad to pay it.
I don't know. We'll work something out.
Well, I just appreciate it more than you know.
I appreciate it.
I've been trying to do this for myself, and I've got quite a little bit done, and I've got another book that my granddaughter gave me with the questions that I've written. But I really haven't had an interesting life. All the years in Woburn, Wyoming, I did so many things, As a child, the first job I could ever remember having, I copied marriage licenses in a great big ledger. The justice of the peace was our neighbor. I think I was 9 years old. And he came over, he always called me Gailey, and he said, Gailey, I think I got a job for you. And I was just a child, you know, and he took me over in this great big book I had to get up on the stool. And of course, the forms were all in the book, you know. All you had to do was fill in the names of the ones. Mm-hmm. And he gave me 50 cents.
50 cents, wow.
And I can see that childish handwriting. But, you know, I thought that was great.
Well, I agree. That really was.
But I worked in the drugstore. I worked in the telephone office. I worked in the land office. I taught 5 terms of school. I worked in the Forest Service office. I worked in the coal office. I worked at the Chamber of Commerce. I worked at the depot. I always had a job. But, you know, it did something for me. When I went away to school, I couldn't afford it because it was the year my father died, but I worked for my board at the dormitory, I waited table. I had a lot of false pride. But it did something for me that it was the best thing ever happened to me.
You mean you felt that waiting tables wasn't good enough for you?
Well, you know, at that time, it was very different, I think, with regular waitresses, but I had that feeling, you know. And, of course, the whole bunch of us went down from Sundance, and they think it was nice. They gave me the last 6 weeks of school, they put in all my kids from in my room at my tables. So I had 15.
Mm-hmm.
But but it was good. Yeah, I'm glad I did it because, as I say, I had a lot of false pride. But I've had a good life, and I just think when I... With these kids out here at school, the other night I was out to a party. We had a couple here that graduated quite a long time ago, and it was fixed. They had a party out here, a visiting party. And I just thought that I sat there. But the kids now I have, a lot of the kids that I write to are 78, 90, 80 years old. You know, they're my kids.
Mm-hmm.
I get hundreds of Christmas cards. I get them, and they've done so many beautiful things. I've got a book of letters there, that big, thick one, that they gave us in 1960-something. And they gave us $6,000 to go on a trip to Europe.
Oh, my word.
But I wasn't up to it. It was when Daddy started to first lose his eyesight.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't up to doing it. So we went to Hawaii instead.
Mm-hmm.
And I got that book is full of personal letters that they gave us at that time when they gave us the $6,000.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And all the wonderful contacts and the love and the contacts that I've had with those people. And then you see all the wonderful. And, you know, they don't change. They never get big-headed. They come back and all the wonderful things they've done. Right now, we have a boy by the name of Frank Burris who is working on instruments for heart transplants.
Mm.
And he's hit pay dirt.
He's hit pay dirt.
I got a letter from him, and the doctor's writing to me. They can't offer him any money, but they want him to keep on with this thing because he's got something that's... I got the letter.
Burris, B-U-R-R-I-S?
Mm-hmm. Right. I could go on and on, you know. There's so many things that these kids have done. Tom Malone, he wrote the Bible on meteorology.
Meteorology.
Mm-hmm. We've just got... Of course, you know, I'm princess. But I can't help it because... And they've been good kids. We never had campus trouble like they've had a lot of places. But I don't know now. I'm scared about the changes that's taking place out here.
Gail's going to tell us about the first time Devil's Tower was climbed. Let's start over. You were in the clothes basket under the wagon.
And it was a bad storm, but it was a big celebration, and they had it on the 4th of July, 1893, because I'd been born that January before.
You don't really remember.
No, not remember, only just from Mother telling
me. The man's name was Will Rogers.
Will Rogers. And I think his wife, I think that was the beginning of the woman livers. The next year she climbed it. She was not to be outdone. Now, it took him a long time.
Was he the fellow who drove the, made that wooden ladder, drove the...
The stakes and ropes. And those ropes hung up there when I was quite a grown girl. They finally burned them down because they afraid people would get hurt because they got rotten, you know. But those old ropes hung down there. They put in, what did they call these stakes? They piled them in. He worked his way up there. And then I tell you, when we had this Devil's Tower George, just back here in 42, that parachuted on the tower, you know. That was just famous, you know. It was the Isle of Bet down here, one of the service clubs.
Yeah, I've written a story about that.
Yeah.
You know, you can still see those wooden stakes that Will Rogers stuck in there.
Sure.
Tell me something. Now, one fella told me that Rogers and somebody else built that ladder, drove the stakes into the crevice, and they announced they were going to climb on July 4th, and people came from miles around to see it. And this is a story that was told me. And so they, with great ceremony, they climbed this ladder to the top of Devil's Tower. When they got there, there was a kid making faces at him. Did you ever hear that story?
That's all poppycock.
You didn't?
It's just being poppycock.
It didn't work that way.
No.
Did he climb it alone, or did...
No, she climbed it alone.
Nobody was there. Okay. All right.
But you know, they had been other people climbed it, but there's no new... Willard Ripley owned that ranch out there, had climbed that, and another man from Spirit Reach, but they just out and climbed it. There was never any notoriety about it, you see. But that never got out. But Willard is one that... It was a big crowd. They got pictures. My folks are in that picture. They got a picture out the tower. We always, they had an old settlers picnic up there for years after we come down here. We always went up to it, you know, because that's where all the people come in, because we knew everybody within 50 miles of Sundance, you know, little places you do have, and close friendships. And so we always went up there. It got to be that my sister and I were the only old timers.
You saw Calamity Jane.
She came over there with us and danced, and I was just... It was about 1905, a little before 1905, I think. It was, must have been more like 1902. I don't know what she was over there, but a little town. She was over there, it was about a week. And, of course, we heard this Calamity Jane, you know, how everybody was agog. I don't know anything, but there was a place they called the Old American House where she stayed. But we were so dumbfounded, because those days they called bars saloons, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And no lady even went by a saloon if you could avoid it. If you did, you walked on the way on the outside of the sidewalk.
Sure.
And she walked in the front door. Of course, she'd come out with a pail of beer. Sometimes she was so high she couldn't have hit the sidewalk with her sunbonnet. But, you know, they always showed her in buckskins. But she wore what we used to call wrappers. It was a one-piece dress with velvet and a sunbonnet. It was gray, either calico or gingham. And she was a little petite thing. She was not when you think of Calamity Jane, you think of probably a big, boisterous woman, but she was anything else but. She was a little petite person. And she'd come out there, but her sunbonnet was usually tied here, but was down hanging on the back of her neck. But we kids were just agog, you know, we were afraid of her to think, you know, anybody going to a saloon. It was just so vivid because the calamity, we never even knew what calamity meant. And I knew the man very well that carried her off of the train. His name was Tillett. That was his first name.
What was the last name?
Tillett. He was the conductor on the Northwestern Railroad. His sister was the wife of a groceryman that lived here, Mr. J.B. Hemp. He had a grocery store there on St. Joe Street, and they lived there on the corner where the Ray Clinic is now. And his name, what was his first name? I knew him really well. He was an awfully fine man. And he was on the train. There used to be a train that ran from Whitewood up to Deadwood.
How do you spell that name?
Tillett.
Okay, he was the conductor.
Mm-hmm. They lived in Alliance, Nebraska.
Alliance.
We stopped there later years on our way to Chicago.
You say he carried Calamity Jane off the train.
She had been east, and she came back home.
Mm-hmm.
And she was so ill, she couldn't get off the train.
Oh, I see.
And his name was Sam Tillett. And he carried her off the train and took her up to an old miner's cabin, and that's where she died.
Oh, she died of pneumonia in 1915, as I recall.
But, you know, she'd go in where there was diphtheria. She'd go in and nurse. She did lots of wonderfully good things.
That is the end of the interview with Gail March. There's nothing else on this tape.